There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, to all four corners of the globe on this beautiful greenish-blue planet that we call our Earth. How you doing, everybody? Phil here on the podcast. It's that time of the day again. That time of the week, that time of whenever, as I'm renewed to keep the podcast going. Oh, as I spoke about last week, moved out of my office, my mixing room there at the studio, still, of course, using the big room there, recording at Trinidad. I don't know, it's an interesting call. Is Trinidad the big room back there, or is it where? See, Trinidad originally is wherever I am making music. So I guess you have to say that Trinidad has moved here to the Pritchett Homestead. We do have tracking space up there on Erie Street, where we've made the records the last several 6 or 7 years. But I will now be mixing here at the house. But I am in search of a new office, a new rehearsal band space here in Fort Worth. Let me know, man. Phil at philpritchett.com if you got any ideas. If you got a granddad out here in Aledo or somebody with a barn or a garage or a trailer or something like that that we could move into, man. I'll make it worth your while, man. I'll make that building legendary and pay a little rent in the process. How does that sound? Ha ha! Great to be with you, folks. Great to be with you here, podcasting again, opining, bringing you all the news from the front lines of Texas music world. Let me tell you, man, let me shoot you straight here. It's with a heavy heart I continue. It's with a heavy heart that I soldier on and I continue in this fashion that I do. I turned 40 last year. And man, I've been at this thing for so freaking long. It's just, you know, now I've got like kids. I run into people at shows, some young guy just having a beer. Say, hey man, you're Phil, right? Yeah. They'll just go, yeah, man, my dad really loves you. I'm just kind of like, thanks. You know, I get that now quite a bit. My dad thinks you're great, or my mom, you know, likes your stuff. Kids of fans, or you know, that kind of deal. It's all new, man. And you know what? What's tough about being here in Fort Worth? You know, Fort Worth's not like Austin or Nashville, where you just got all these musicians. Everybody's just eating lunch at 3 p.m. You know, Fort Worth's kind of a working man's town. It's 9 to 5. You go downtown, you have offices. You know, Pat Green lives here. I see him around sometime, but, oh, he's not really in the local scene like I am. He's not playing the White Elephant, you know, every couple months and that kind of deal. So, yeah, don't see Pat much. He's around. You know, when I first started doing this, making albums, when I moved into the Stockyard place, I guess that was like 2005 or something like that. Man, it was kind of a scene. You know, I was there in the Stockyards, and I just knew a lot of the young guys, man, like McGee Payne and of course, the podcast's own Kurt South and Jordan McCoskey and, you know, had all the guys in the band, Lynch and Stolly, and then Stu and JW, who's still with me. But anyway, guys would just pop by the Stockyard studio all the time. And then when I was at the place on Erie Street, man, early on, people would be popping by all the time. I was just kind of in this... there was people around playing music, you know. But man, you know what? Life exacts a pretty heavy toll, you know, you look around and as you get a little bit older, you guys get married, guys have kids, as I have done, and just you look around and it kind of slows around. And it's not that I work less or I'm less productive or don't do as well. In fact, I do better now than I ever have, at least as far as providing for the family and that kind of thing. There's just not as much activity. I book a band, we record, and that's it. We book a show, we go do it, that's it. In the old days, three, four, 5 years ago, oh man, I had an agent, I had Matt Pivato booking me. He'd call me all the time. We'd gossip. Hey, what's going on? We just talk. Kurt South. Hey, then I get buzzed by the, Susan up front at, the studio. Kurt South here to see you. Oh, send him on back. Send him on. What are you working on, Phil? Oh, I'm mixing this thing. We'd hang out and we'd do a podcast. There was all this stuff just kind of churning around. But man, that was the 20s. That was our 20s. That was our 30s. So it was kind of a leery and weary head and heart that I look forward, because I'm kind of like, man, so many of these guys, Kurt moved on to Virginia, moved back home to Virginia with his wife and family. He's running a business there. Jordan McCoskey moved to Nashville to work in an unmusic related job. And I keep up with those guys. I do text and we stay up and they're all doing well. I'm happy to report. But it is a bit, sometimes I just feel a little lonely, you know? I mean, the guys doing, the guy you hear about selling out Billy Bob's, the Randy Rogers and, Casey Donahue, Josh Abbott, I don't know. Those guys are, 10 years younger than me or so, or more, I'd guess. And I don't know, man, I walk around, feeling more like, Ray Wiley Hubbard, than I used to. No offense, Ray. I love you. I love you. I don't know. I feel like some kind of somewhat of an elder statesman of some kind, but it's admittedly a bit of a quiet life, to be perfectly honest. I've got my clubs and festivals and things that I've played for a lot of years that I line up, always looking for new stuff, of course. But yeah, no one ever just comes in the doors just to hang out and listen to what I'm working on. That's very, very rare indeed these days. But hey, man, you're in something for as long as I've been in this thing and people cycle through, and I've met so many people, but few are still at 40 years old, still just out there banging around and playing songs and trying to get stuff out there. So I don't know. Take that for whatever it's worth. I'm certainly not. I hope it doesn't sound like I'm complaining about it. It's just something that you look up one day and you miss it a little bit. I'm like, man, I remember we used to just have dudes hanging around jamming, and we'd just be messing around, and we'd go hit the White Elephant for a beer or whatever. And you look up one day, oh, what happened? What's his name? Oh, he married. Man, he got this job. Yeah, he moved away. And that's just the story, at least in Fort Worth here, kind of the local deal. And the guys I do hear about, like I said, are much, much younger than I am. And, they haven't been hit with the wife and kids and the paying for the house and all that kind of stuff yet. Well, good luck to all those dudes, man. My best wishes to all of them. Give me a call, 817-733-5256, if you want to hang out with Phil. I've always got coffee and music. That's what I got going on, and it's always free, man. Well, speaking of music, I wanted to make you aware of an epidemic we have going on in this country, and a very interesting philosophy and theory put forth by none other than the great J.C. Marshall, father of J.W. Marshall, bass player for the full band. JC is a great character, man. Effing lives in Effingham, Illinois, a product of the 60s. J-Dub's dad, J-W, our bass player from Effingham. He's got a basement up there. He lives in his old family home. His parents, JC and Bev, still are there. His brother Richard works here with JW here in Texas now. And his brother Levi is a concert promoter up there in Illinois. So anyway, the full band is, we've been up there to play Illinois festivals and shows on and off over the past several years. It's been wonderful. Their hospitality unmatched in the Midwest, or anywhere else for that matter, as far as the full band is concerned. So I was thrilled when JW calls me and says, hey man, my dad is looking to just kind of get out of the house. It's cold up here in Illinois. He wants to come on the road. So JC comes down. He goes to watch us play a show at Corpus Christi. Saw a great show down there at the Executive Surf Club. And he saw us play at the Firehouse down there. And he saw us play at the, where else we play? He was here like a week later. Oh, the Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo. So JC came down. JC's got a lot of theories, man. He's been around. He's seen a lot of stuff, been in the music business. And he had an interesting theory that pertains to this point I'm going to make here about vinyl records. Everyone knows I collect vinyl, but really that's only been about the last 10 years. I tell the story on this podcast before of walking into Half Price Books, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, buying some books. There's all these vinyl albums over there with no one really looking through them. Just by the crate, by the ton, people just offloading their vinyl for pennies, right? It was, everybody has CDs now. It's all downloads now. Big deal. And I see the tipping point for me was an old Tom Petty, Damn the Torpedoes, still in the little plastic wrap. You know what I mean? Like not even opened, just sitting there. I said, oh man, Damn the Torpedoes, man. I've had that in various forms over the years. It was $1. I'm like, $1? It's not even opened yet. I didn't even have a record player anymore. My old one had given out. But I just said, man, $1? You know what? I'm buying Tom Petty, Damn the Torpedoes. Hell yeah! And that's what I did. So I walk out with my Tom Petty. I just kind of stuck it on a shelf in the studio. Just, you know, an open copy of Damn the Torpedoes. Yeah, cool. People come in. Oh, hey, you know, that's a great record. Oh, yeah, it's not even opened. It's $1. You know, I got it. Well, man, right behind that Tom Petty record in the stacks were about 12 other copies of Damn the Torpedoes in various stages of crinkled album artwork, covers, scratched albums. You know, there's just tons of them. By the tons, every Petty record was in there. Well, I go out to another Half Price Books out here by Ridgemar Mall, North Fort Worth, one day. And they've got tons of stuff out there. And man, I start going, you know what? I'm going to get me an old record player. Look at this stuff. I mean, I didn't have my CD collection anymore. It was all on my iPod. I just didn't have any music, physical music at all. So I go through there. Sure enough, man, there's every Elton John. They're all $1, $2, $3 maybe. And man, I just load up and I probably spent $150 in one day and went through the stacks at those two Half Price Books locations and basically bought any record that I ever loved, that was in there that I had bought previously in, 8-track or, vinyl or cassette or CD or something. You know, just Fleetwood Mac Rumors, just yes, okay. Elton John, Madman Across the Water, Tumbleweed Connection, no question about it. Jackson Browne for Every Man, forget about it. Who's next? Gripe, I just stacked it up. All the classics. And they were all there. Everything was there. Piled it up in no time. Probably had 100 records for about, I probably spent $200 maybe, something like that. All at once, thrilled, just had nowhere to put it. nothing to play it on. So anyway, that was the deal. This is like 2004, maybe 2005, something like that. Well, over the years, I've been aware of just more people my age that I run into. So, hey man, you know what I've been doing, man? I've been collecting vinyl records. I'm like, oh, me too, man. Yeah, I've been buying some vinyl again. Yeah, they're Half Price Books, man. They're 50 cents, $1, $2, there. Oh, yeah. So I've just been more aware that I was not alone in this movement. I certainly didn't start it, but something kick-started in me about age 35 or whatever, where I said, hey man, I wanted to reconnect with these albums and these things that I used to have as a kid. Of course, that's all anybody had was vinyl. So here I am collecting like a child once again. It's so fun and freeing. And I become aware that everyone's like this. Well, man, I go into the store the other day. I've kind of got everything I need, but I go into Half Price Books the other day, and I'd been aware of this for a while, but the other day was just totally alarming. There was just like a few records in there. I mean, minuscule, nothing. I turned to the guy, go, hey man, where's all the albums? He's like, man, we're sold out. I'm like, what? I mean, they used to have just, I'm telling you, piles of Van Morrison. You would just kind of kick them aside as you walked in the store. Nothing. Not a damn thing. A couple Neil Diamonds, ABBA, America, and a 80s Robert Palmer album. I'm like, dude, where are all the ads? Oh, man, we're sold out, dude. It's right after Christmas, you know what I mean? And, dude, every guy I run into now my age is going, man, I've been collecting vinyl, man. And I realized then we're at a peak. We're in a bubble. We are in a vinyl bubble resurgence. Everyone goes, man, vinyl's coming back. Well, in some ways that's true, but man, it is a bubble. It is just an artificial nostalgic bubble. And to bring all this back to JC, J.W. Marshall, bass player of the full band's father, J.C. Hell, we rode in the van 16 hours down and back to Corpus Christi. Let me tell you what, J.C. can talk. He can spin a yarn. He's got opinions on things. And we talked a lot. And so I was telling him about this vinyl thing. I go, man, there's nothing out there. I mean, you can't find Dylan or especially like Dylan, Neil Young, Zeppelin, Beatles. There's none of that anywhere at Half Price Books. Now, you can go to a vintage shop, you know, like Docks or somewhere like that, or Forever Young in Arlington, and you can find it. And you can find those, you know, Harvest by Neil Young, but they're going to want like 10 bucks, 15 bucks, 25 bucks. Insane, man. Much more than they were when they were new. Hey, crazy, crazy. I'm like, gee, I was talking to JC about this. Like, man, it's nuts, man. I can't buy it. He goes, man, this is what happens. This is what happens in the world. I'm like, what are you talking about, JC? He goes, look, man. He goes, think about it. In the 1950s, kids were growing up, collecting baseball cards, bubblegum cards, you know, 12 years old, and trade them and whatever. Well, when those kids at 12 years old, some 30 years later, right? Like in the 80s, remember the 80s? Oh, yeah. Well, when these guys got to be 35, 40, 45 years old, somewhere in there, what happens, man? What do these guys, now that they're 40, now that they've got some time, now that they've got a room in their house devoted to themselves with a pool table and a couple deer on the wall, what do they want to put in this room? Ah, what did I love? Is it, what do I love? They stumble across some old baseball cards. Remember this? Man, I was a kid in the 70s and 80s watching the price of a rookie Mickey Mantle card go to $100,000 or some ridiculous number. And sure enough, a market was born. The baseball card boom. I knew guys putting their rookie Barry Bonds card in safe deposit boxes, you know, in climate controlled safes and things. I'll send my kids to college with this baseball card. And you know, I'm just like, well, how can that be possible? It's a piece of cardboard. How can it be worth $100,000? Of course, the answer is it's only worth $100,000 if some guy wants to pay you for it. Well, some 40-year-old multimillionaire who never got a Mickey Mantle rookie card, he goes, well, you know, damn it, I'm going to finally have me a Mickey Mantle rookie card. They find one in mint condition. They buy it. Well, man, that sends shockwaves throughout the industry. Man, look what this thing's worth. Look what this thing's worth. And sure enough, you had a few years there in the 80s until what happened? You had so many cards hitting the market and it just collapsed. And everybody realized that, like, oh, it's just a piece of cardboard. Now, I'm not saying that a Mickey Mantle rookie card doesn't have any value. There's always a couple things that do have value. But it's kind of a lesson to be learned, really. I have made the same point about vintage gear before. You love vintage gear, Phil? Man, look at this old Fender amp. Yes, of course I do. But man, it's only worth, you know, we all got this old beat up Strat. We're like, oh man, these things are going for $10,000 on eBay. Well, look closely at eBay, at the beat up Strat from 1973 or 1968. The Japanese guys are buying it up, man. It's a world market. Well, okay. I think one of those things sold once a few years back, mint condition, a very particular thing, maybe some guy bought. And there's certainly a market for those nice old guitars. But I wonder, because I know the same kind of deal, guys that have safes filled with early 60s Les Pauls and stuff, fine instruments. But you wonder if the guys that are 18 right now are going to want to shell out $25,000 for a 61 Les Paul or something, or whatever we think it's worth. And the vintage gear resurgence. You kind of had baseball cards in the 80s. I feel like we've had vintage gear resurgence, late 90s. As, once again, the baby boomers, the guys who were watching Cream and the Beatles and all the early 70s Allman Brothers and stuff. Well, now these guys are in their 40s and stuff. They're buying up that gear and paying top dollar for it. Because I used to have a Strat, but I got rid of it. Man, I'm going to go back and buy a 64 mint condition Strat. Well, they'll pay any price for it. They got the money, and it's a hobby. And now we have got another bubble, I would say, in that we have vinyl. There is no vinyl coming on the market. No one's just taking their Dylan records and Zeppelin and just throwing, I'm getting rid of all this crap. Who would want this? Everybody knows now because of the internet and the word out there. Oh man, vinyl. Man, you can get, you know, Van Morrison a nice copy of Tupelo Honey. Oh man, you can get $12 for that. Well, a few years ago, you just put it on the curb. You know, people just give me their vinyl. Here, come get it. So, man, we're really in a bubble. And JC made a great point. He just goes, man, it's really cyclical on stuff like that. Baseball cards, vintage gear, guitars and stuff like that. Sure, some of it's going to have value as the years go on, but a lot of it's just inflated pricing and nostalgia. And once these guys get too old, people lose interest in it. It's not worth anything. The baseball cards weren't worth anything. Some of these guitars and amps people think are worth thousands of dollars just because they're old, just aren't. They're just not going to sell for that again. And right now, man, we are in the middle of a vinyl. If I wanted to make some money, I'd just sell all my vinyl right now. I'd just walk into some trade show and go, hey, man, you want all the Beatles, all the Rolling Stones? People just call, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, you Let It Bleed. All right, $25. I could hold out or at least kid myself into thinking I'd get top dollar for it. And I might, depending on the circumstances. But very interesting, man, the vinyl bubble. So, but I don't kid myself, man. It'll kind of pass. Eventually we'll all have every Dylan and Neil Young and Beatles. We'll all be caught up. We'll all have it all. And then one by one, guys like myself will start to go, I don't listen to this stuff. Or we'll give it to our kids, or we'll take it back to Half Price Books. I don't take it. Or we'll try to sell it online. We'll sell the whole lot, a lot of 100 records, LPs, man, classic rock, $5,000, and it just won't sell. We buy it now, $4,500, whatever. And it won't sell. And then finally, where does it go? And that's what you end up with, man. So, baseball cards, vintage gear, and vinyl records. Not that I don't love them all or think that some of them have value. Mint condition 57 Strat, sure. Mint condition Willie Mays rookie card, sure. An unopened first pressing of the Beatles White Album, sure. Those are going to bring some money on the market anywhere you go. But, man, your run-of-the-mill beat-up Telecaster from the mid-70s or, a scratched-up copy of Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. I'm just kind of like, dude, come on. So I've got to be careful because I do have some records that I still want to get for my collection. And I run across them occasionally at Docs or Forever Young where I know they have them. And, man, it's just, Lola versus Power Man by the Kinks. Here it is. Sweet. Nice guys. Man, they want $25. I'm just like, God, I cannot do it, man, because I bought all this stuff for pennies a few years ago. So I just I have to tell myself we're in a bubble. You know what I mean? I have to just tell myself we're in a bubble. And, bite the bullet and don't buy. So it's breaking my heart, man. I can't go out and buy cheap vinyl anymore. I have, though. There are things you can buy still for $1, $2, $3. Some country albums, jazz albums. And I've bought some of that stuff. I do run across some Miles Davis or some... couple Waylon Jennings albums I bought for not very much. But, man, that classic rock stuff is hard to find. And now it's just non-existent. There's none of it on the market at all. You can't even find it anywhere. We've all got them locked up. We're all collecting. We're all hoarding in our 40s, trying to recapture our youth, as J.C. Marshall told us we once would. And, man, eventually it'll all come back on the market again, as worthless as ever. Well, folks, those are my thoughts on, becoming an elder Ray Wiley Hubbard type statesman in this industry, at least here in Fort Worth, man. Email me, phil@philpritchard.com. Come record, man. We've got access to the studio there, of course, making our records up there on Erie Street or anywhere else. Man, my friend Brian Hunt called me the other day. They're thinking about tracking a record in Austin. He was like, hey, Phil, man, would you come down here to Austin and help us produce for a couple days? I'm like, you're damn right I will. Let's do it. Rock and roll. I'll go anywhere, do anything. Do it all the time. Also, you can just send me that hard drive, man, like we did for my friend Peter Wagner, for my friend Donnie Waits down there in Houston. How you doing, Donnie? Those guys just recorded in the garage or some other studio, and they just literally sent me a hard drive in the mail. Hey, man, here's the tracks. I just flew them into my rig here, gassed up the organ and the amps and the mics, and just mixed his record, man, and then added in some keys and percussion and harmony and whatever else he wanted, and just sent him back a beautiful, big, huge mix, mastered mix, all, a record, man. He was like, man, worked out well for him. I enjoy doing it. A lot of ways to record, man. So, man, the point is, track, record yourself. Then, hey, maybe we can get together and track at one of the rooms up here or somewhere else. Or you can just send me those tracks you got, man. Say, hey, I like to use the tracks I've got here and roll with it like that. Add what you can, Phil. All kinds of ways to do it. Phil at philpritchett.com, or always call me, 817-733-5256. Book those private parties. A lot of them booked here in spring and summer. We'll be at my friend Craig Spivey's place, the Bowl Lounge. Man, one of these bowling alley bar things. They're opening a huge one. My friend Craig Spivey in Dallas at the corner of Irving Boulevard and Turtle Creek. The Bowl Lounge, B-O-W-L-O-U-N-G-E. The full band will be playing there March 30th. That's a Saturday night before Easter. It's a free show. There'll be us, a stage. You can bowl. You can drink beer, watch the band. It should be a hell of a great time. Very excited about that. Call us for your party, 817-733-5256. Folks, it's so good to be back here, podcasting away, all the gear set up once more. We'll be bringing you more news from Phil World every week from right here. Email me and let me know what you think about the podcast, suggestions. Also, let me know if you already know where the new Trinidad World recording needs to be. Let me know, folks. Until next time, this is Phil signing off. We'll see everybody next week right here. Much tougher.